Galileo, Galilei, 1564-1642, stands foremost among the precursors of Newton. His chronology presents some curious coincidences, unless you believe in the transmigration of souls. Galileo was born about the same day Michelangelo died. And he died in the year Newton was born. Astronomer, mathematician, inventor, physicist, Galileo could be cited as the first person in the scientific revolution to reach out and touch the universe through his early experiments with bodies in motion. Aristotle had declared any object rolling down an incline moves with constant speed. Naturally, a heavier object rolls faster than a light object. And for 2,000 years, no one bothered to test this theory. Galileo proved Aristotle wrong. Objects accelerate when they move down an incline, but whether the objects are light or heavy, they accelerate at the same rate and reach the bottom at the same time. A simple experiment, but it surely shakes your confidence in the validity of Aristotelian physics. Among his many other accomplishments, Galileo contributed to the invention of the thermometer, worked on the barometer, discovered the principles of the pendulum, making it possible to construct the first mechanical clock. He formulated the principles of the lever and the pulley, proved that a projectile propelled in a horizontal direction would fall to the earth in a parabolic curve. Being a musician of no little talent, he reduced musical tones to wavelengths of air and showed that the pitch of a note depends upon the number of vibrations made by the struck string in a given time. These basic contributions to physics, Galileo laid the foundation for the age of science and the age of the machine, technology. And yet he personally seemed unfulfilled. Son of the Renaissance, he regretted that he could not write poetry like Dante, sculpt or paint like Michelangelo, or discover new lands like Columbus. Increasingly, he turned his attention to astronomy, where he might be able to provide new insights to science and philosophy. Personally, he felt philosophy had gone to sleep in the lap of Aristotle, and now needed to be awakened. Astronomy, the mother of sciences, might well be the catalyst which would allow us to perceive the cosmos in a new perspective. One day, he heard about a simple magnifying instrument fashioned by a Dutch lens maker. Inspired by the concept, he ground some lenses and constructed a spyglass, which could bring a sailing vessel 50 miles away into focus as though it were only 5 miles distance. And then, working feverishly, he improved the instrument until it could magnify an object 1,000 times. And then, one night, he directed the instrument, which he now called a telescope, to the heavens. Up to that magical moment, all astronomical observations from the ancient Babylonians to Copernicus and Kepler had been made with a naked eye. His book, The Starry Messenger, describes the marvels he first beheld. Mountains on the moon. The Milky Way, crammed with stars hitherto unseen. And most remarkable of all, four satellites, four moons, revolving around Jupiter. Later on, he discovered the rings of Saturn, which he interpreted as three stars, and found Venus has crescent phases like the moon. The critics of Copernicus had always touted the idea that if Venus really revolved around the sun, it should display moon-like phases. None of these observations, in and of themselves, could be offered as proof that the Aristotelian, Ptolemaic, Aquinas, Dante universe was an illusion, nor in this book did Galileo make such an assertion. But they certainly raised serious questions. And yet, most of us will cling to our belief systems, our worldview, regardless of the evidence. In a letter to Kepler, Galileo writes about the professors of Padua University, who refused to recognize his discoveries, refused even to look through the telescope, to see for themselves. Reality can be a Medusa, turning you to stone. In happy contrast, the Jesuits praised Galileo as the greatest astronomer of the age. I stayed with the Jesuit fathers in Rome, Galileo wrote. They had verified the actual existence of the new planets, that is, the moons around Jupiter, and had been constantly observing them for 2 months. We compared notes, and I found that their observations agreed exactly with my own. End of quote. The Church accepted any astronomical observations as long as they were not used to prove the correctness of the Copernican theory. Remember, it had only been 11 years since they burned Bruno at the stake. To show how Byzantine the situation, when you try to reconcile dogma with verifiable evidence, for years, the Jesuits have been quietly teaching the heliocentric principles as an hypothesis. They'd even used Copernicus' calculations to reform the church calendar, although still regarding his findings as hypothetical. But now, encouraged by Kepler, Galileo became convinced that his observations could only be explained by the Copernican theory. Quote, "I do not feel obliged to believe that the same God who has endowed us with sense and reason and intellect has intended us to forego their use." End of quote. Publishing a paper on sunspots, which he also discovered, he boldly advocated the Copernican heliocentric universe as a proven fact, no longer a theory, a hypothesis. Quote, "I hold the sun to be situated motionlessly in the center of the revolutions of the celestial orbs, while the earth rotates on its axis and revolves around the sun." End of quote. Well, the Dominicans had just about had it. They had done their best to suppress this heliocentric nonsense, but succeeded only in making the Inquisition look inept. From the very beginning, they warned that the Copernican heliocentric doctrine not only threatened the hierarchy of the Church, but indeed of the very state itself. And they were very prophetic. Already the Protestant humanists were beginning to say that the new Copernican system authorized a more democratic attitude in which all humans were in direct communion with God. And then in a few years, Cromwell, with his motley army of Puritans, levelers, and diggers, would overthrow the legitimate government of England. The Dominicans began a counterattack, determined to draw the line here and now. Always powerful orators, they preached sermons against Copernicans and the followers of Galileo, whom they called Galileans. One such sermon bore the title, "Ye Men of Galilee, Why Stand Ye Gazing Up into Heaven?" The Church, they declared, was not about to renounce the divinely inspired theology just to accommodate Galileo and his telescope. It went beyond reason to expect a mechanical device to reveal what the eye alone could not see, what the blessed saints could not see. Quite obviously, the telescope produced these alleged images, nothing but a cheap magician's trick. After consultations with the Pope, the Inquisition gave Galileo fair warning, verbally and in writing. Abstain. Abstain altogether from teaching or defending the Copernican theory as proven fact. However, they did not forbid him to consider the Copernican view as a mathematical hypothesis, in deference to the Jesuits. Galileo returned to Florence and kept silent for 8 years while pursuing various scientific objectives. And then he did the unthinkable. He published a book, Dialogue on the Two Chief Systems of the World, written in Italian rather than conventional scholarly Latin, to ensure its reading by the general public. In a devastatingly ironic vein, Galileo has two characters in the dialogue, Salviati and Segreto, the names of his closest friends, defend the Copernican system while Simplicio, the antagonist, rejects it with foolish and vain dogmatic arguments. Unfortunately, Simplicio mouths some of the Pope's very own words. Then, during the course of the dialogue, the Jesuits are scorned for their double standards of truth. To add insult to injury, Galileo advocates Bruno's plurality of sun-centered universes. The proverbial cat had leaped out of the bag, never to be put back in again. Galileo's book marked the turning point in Western scientific and philosophical thought, a public declaration on the death of medieval reality and the birth of a new paradigm. Needless to say, the Dominicans of the Inquisition, the Papal Court, and the Jesuits were outraged by his defiance and dismayed by his boldness. This happened in the midst of the 30-Year War. The Jesuits now declared that the doctrines of Copernicus and Galileo were more dangerous to the church than all the heresies of Luther and Calvin. Immediately, the church banned the book, which now only ensured its success. But they still had the man. On April 12th, 1634, the Inquisition put Galileo on trial for heresy, a trial that lasted over a year. Transcripts of the trial reveal much of the evidence rested upon forged documents. This became so evident that three of the inquisitors refused to find him guilty, although the majority had no such difficulty. Under threat of torture and death at the stake, Galileo was forced to kneel before his accusers and recant his Copernican belief. In a formal statement, frighteningly prophetic of some confessions obtained in political trials of the 20th century, Galileo said, "I have been pronounced by the Holy Office to be vehemently suspected of heresy. That is to say, of having held and believed that the sun is the center of the world and immovable, and that the earth is not the center and moves. Therefore, desiring to remove from the minds of your eminences and all faithful Christians this strong suspicion reasonably conceived against me, with sincere heart and unfeigned faith, I abjure, curse, and detest the aforesaid errors and heresies, and generally every other error and sect whatsoever contrary to the said Holy Church." End of quote. Upon rising from his knees, Galileo was heard to mutter, "Nevertheless, the earth does move." In a splendid spirit of generosity, the Holy Office sentenced him to life under house arrest, effectively silencing him and halting his scientific work. Echoes of Andrei Sakharov under house arrest in Gorky. This trial marked the rapid decline of Italian and Catholic scientific activity, leaving Italy an intellectual and cultural wasteland. One Italian critic wrote, "We can date back to that day, indeed, the time when Florentine civilization, which had carried the world since the 13th century, practically vanished from history."